We are continuing in the 21st chapter of Ezekiel, and last time we'd gotten through verse 24. And in the previous verses to our text at this time, he has been showing that the king of Babylon is going to come to Jerusalem, showing how that he made the decision when he came to the crossroads by using those means of divination. And now, in beginning with verse 25, he specifically is going to show how that the government is going to be overthrown. So verse 25 says, "And thou, profane, wicked prince of Israel, whose day is come, whose iniquity shall have an end." Now this is talking about Zedekiah. Zedekiah is the king of Israel. He is the duly set in office king, although he was set in by the power of Nebuchadnezzar, but it was according to God's will that he be there, and he also was in the proper family line to be the king. But he is the one, then, that this is directed against primarily. And he first of all tells some of the character of Zedekiah. He calls him profane. Profane means that he is against the things that are holy, against the things that are of God, that he is not of a spiritual mind, that he does not give due regard to those things that belong then to the worship of the true and living God. Wicked talks about his sinfulness, his wrongdoing, and so he is called a profane, wicked prince of Israel. And the nation has a very hard time being any more righteous than its king. When the king is profane, when the king is wicked, when the leader is opposed to the things that God wants the people to do, then that sets the pattern for the rest of the nation. So we can see then how important it is that Zedekiah be a person that would be approved of God rather than a person that's profane and wicked. So he zeroes in now on the fact that this situation is intolerable and God's going to do something about it. So he says, "Thou profane and wicked prince of Israel, whose day is come, whose iniquity shall have an end." Now, it's time to do something about this very shortly. That's going to happen when the king of Babylon makes this assault upon the city of Jerusalem this third time. That'll be the time when his day has come. It is now at hand. His iniquity shall have an end. His acts, his example, his authority that would lead the people in the wrong direction is coming to an end. He's no longer going to be in the position to do this kind of wickedness, this kind of mischief, this kind of worldliness to the people of God. It shall have an end. So verse 26, "Thus saith the Lord God, remove the diadem and take off the crown. This shall not be the same. Exalt him that is low and abase him that is high." Now, this word here for diadem actually means a symbol of ruling authority. Originally, it was a band of cloth about 2 inches wide that was tied around the head with a knot in the back, but it indicated ruling authority. Later, kings wore this on a triangular piece that was placed on the head. But in this particular passage, according to the Bible scholars, this is referring to the diadem that the high priest wore, so that there was going to be a removal of the high priest from his authority, from his office. And then he says, "Take off the crown," and that's talking about then the crown that Zedekiah or the king wore. So there was going to be a removal of the high priest and a removal of the king both, so that the two major areas of authority in the land, the king and the high priest, were going to be removed. Now, this was certainly removed. They lost their authority, their power, their position. They no longer existed as such. He says in this same verse, "This shall not be the same." And we find that this was borne out in history until the Messiah came, that this was never the same. There was a brief time during the period of Ezra and Nehemiah when they went back to restore the city and to rebuild the temple, that the priesthood was again established. But very soon after that, it greatly degenerated. It fell into the hands of the Hasmoneans, and they were not even of the family of Aaron. They were the wrong tribe. They were not ever supposed to be, in the eyes of God, the priesthood. And the high priest became very wicked and corrupt and politically oriented, and they lost then this great position that they had before the captivity. And he says, "This shall not be the same. Exalt him that is low, and abase him that is high." So that there would come a time in which the lowest person, the very peasant of the land, would really have as much exaltation in the eyes of God, as much authority in the eyes of God, as the one that was high had. And the high would be brought down, and the low would be brought up. This could also be referring to the actual condition during the captivity, in which the Babylonians did not recognize among this people a king or a priest or a priesthood or a high priest, and every person was considered to be the same in the eyes of the captors. Then in verse 27, "I will overturn, overturn, overturn it." Now God's talking about the priesthood. He's talking about the ruling authority. He's talking about the king. These are going to be overturned. They're not going to be allowed to continue to exist. And those that would try to reestablish this government, to appropriate these powers during this time, would fail. And he's probably including such people as Gedaliah and Ishmael, who did try to form some remnant of the government after this third captivity. But he says, "I will overturn, overturn, overturn." God is not going to allow it to be. And certainly, this prophecy was definitely fulfilled. It was not allowed to be. He says, "And it shall be no more until he comes whose right it is, and I will give it him." Now that is very strongly felt to be a prophecy about the Messiah. And as we said, there truly was not a restoration of this king or the high priest until the true Messiah did come. During the period after the captivity, they never got back to their glory, to their power, to their true position in the sight of God that they had before this captivity until the Messiah came. And then the Messiah, of course, he was both king and high priest, and these things have been adequately restored. There is now a kingdom in which he is now reigning. There is now a priesthood of which he is the high priest, and that exists in the church today. Those of us who are members of the church today are priests, and Christ is our high priest. We are citizens of the kingdom, and Christ is our king. And he says in this prophecy, "It shall be no more until he come whose right it is, and I will give it him." And truly it was his right to take this over. He is the Son of God. He is the one whom all this has been prepared for. And then this is a part of the great plan of salvation that God has for man. You know, these people wanted to go after things that God did not want them to have. God made them great promises, and he was in the process of fulfilling these promises. But before he could give them the things he wanted them to have, the great promises, they kept going after lesser things, lesser gods. And this was most displeasing to the true and living God, because of their impatience, because of their unfaithfulness. And so before then he could give them what he wanted them to have, he had to completely abolish the corrupt system that they'd fallen into. And he does it here with the Babylonian captivity. Beginning in the 28th verse, he tells of the impending destruction of the Ammonites. The Ammonites were the descendants of Ammon, who was the son of Lot by his younger daughter. He was the brother of Moab, and the Ammonites were kin to the Israelites. They had been very antagonistic against the Israelites. They rejoiced in any of the downfalls or calamities that were coming upon the Israelites at this time. They were not worshiping the true God. They had Moloch for their God. And so God was most displeased with them. And he begins by saying, "Thou son of man, prophesy and say, thus saith the Lord God concerning the Ammonites and concerning their reproach." Now they were in an unfavorable position with God because they had a reproach. Their activity, their behavior, their religion was considered to be by God a reproach. It was considered to be by God something that was beneath his dignity, beneath that he would be pleased with and allow, and consequently he held it against them. So he says, "Even say thou, the sword is drawn. For the slaughter it is furbished to consume because of the glittering." So he talks about the impending destruction, the doom that's going to come upon this nation of Ammon, and he says the sword is drawn. And this is more than likely talking about the very same sword that the king of Babylon has drawn to use against Jerusalem. And previously in this chapter we saw where the king of Babylon came to this crossroads, and he decided he had to decide which way he was going to go. Was he going to go down towards Raboth and destroy the Ammonites first, or was he going to go to Jerusalem first? And so he used some methods of divination, and he chose to go to Jerusalem first. And when he chose to do this, then the Ammonites took great comfort in the fact that he wasn't going to come their way, and they rejoiced over the fact that Jerusalem was going to be destroyed. But God is telling them that this same sword, it's drawn, it has been polished and shined for the slaughter, and it's going to consume because of its glittering. That is, because it's ready to do so. Verse 29, "While they see vanity unto thee, while they divine a lie unto thee, to bring thee upon the necks of them that are slain of the wicked." Now, exactly who this is that is seeing vanity and divining a lie, it's a little hard to say. Some feel that the false prophets in Jerusalem who are telling Jerusalem that this destruction is not going to come by the king of Babylon, that those prophets are the ones that are being referred to here. But it seems to me that he's referring to the prophets that are in Ammon itself. Those prophets are seeing vanity and divining a lie. They're telling Ammon that they're not going to be destroyed, that Babylon has chosen to go the way of Jerusalem and is going to let them go without any destruction. And this gave them a false confidence. It gave them a sense of haughtiness, and they rejoiced over the troubles of their neighbor Israel, and their brothers in the flesh. Now, today, we have to be most careful that we show the proper love one towards another. And when one of our brethren is having distress, is having troubles, let us not rejoice in his problems. Rejoice in his distress. That's a sign of no love, and it's also many times a forerunner to our own calamity and our own destruction when we allow ourselves to do this, because God doesn't let go unpunished those who mistreat his people. And that's what was happening here. The Ammonites were mistreating the Israelites. And one of the things that egged them on were these false prophets who divined a lie unto them and caused them to bring thee upon the necks of them that are slain. That is, they either literally or figuratively came and stood upon the necks of the Israelites who had been slain. They assisted in their slaughter. They didn't do anything to try to thwart it. They didn't do anything to try to assist them in their time of distress. Rather than assist them, they were assisting the Babylonians. And so it brought thee to upon the necks of them that are slain of the wicked, whose day is come, when their iniquity shall have an end. Now it is true that the day of Jerusalem had come. The king of Babylon was, in the context of this chapter, now marching upon Jerusalem, now besieging the city. Their iniquity is going to have an end. That is, the iniquity of Jerusalem is going to have an end. But the behavior of Ammon during this time, the attitude of the Ammonites toward their brethren in their time of distress, is something that God is most displeased with, and he's reminding them of it here at this point. So he says in verse 30, "Shall I cause it to return into a sheath?" And I think he's talking about this same sword of the king of Babylon. And he's asking the question, after we finish this slaughter with Jerusalem, the slaughter of the Judeans, the slaughter of your kinsmen over there, the Israelites, what's going to happen to that sword then? Are we going to put it up? Is the battle going to be over? Is the Babylonian army, this smooth, well-run machine of destruction, is it going to forget about you? Shall I cause it to return into his sheath? He says, I will judge thee in the place where thou wast created, in the land of thy nativity. Now you're going to be judged, Ammon. You're going to be destroyed. And let's notice how he describes where this is going to happen. He says, I will judge thee in the place where thou wast created. Right there in your own home territory, in your nation, the place where you feel most secure, the place where you have made whatever fortifications that you want to make, that's where you're going to be judged. That's where you're going to be destroyed. Now, one of the significant things about this is that at this time, the ungodly nations, those that followed after idolatry, believed that each nation had its own god or gods, and that these gods had power within the boundaries of the individual nations. And so when a god left the boundaries of that nation, he didn't have the power because he was invading the territory of another god. And so they would then believe that if they stayed within their own territory, that their god of Moloch, their idol, would protect them because the Babylonians' god would be out of his territory, and they then would have a god that would have plenty of power to protect them as long as they were in their own homeland, the territory of their own god. But God in heaven, the true and living God, is going to show that this is not true, that this is no way for them to seek any kind of comfort, because he says, I will judge thee in the place where thou wast created, in the land of thy nativity. The very place where you were born, where you're at home, where you have all your security, where you have all the things you're going to lean upon for your safety and comfort, that's exactly where you're going to be destroyed. He says in verse 31, I will pour out mine indignation upon thee. I will blow against thee in the fire of my wrath and deliver thee into the hand of brutish men and skillful to destroy. Now, this is going to be the wrath of God. I will pour out mine indignation upon thee. God is most displeased with the behavior of this people. Now, this people was actually, as we said, kin to the Israelites. But they were treating the Israelites with such disdain, they were acting so haughty, that it aroused the indignation of God. And so God says, I'm going to pour my indignation upon thee. Now, of course, he's using the Babylonian army to do this. The Babylonian army is his instrument, but it's actually God that's bringing it about. He says, I will blow against thee in the fire of my wrath. Now, this is like having a fire and then blowing on the fire to make the fire hotter, to make the fire consume more rapidly. And he says, and deliver thee into the hand of brutish men, skillful to destroy. These members of the Babylonian army were truly brutish men. They had the disposition to kill and to destroy. They had the disposition to not to have any kind of conscience about carrying out the duties of warfare. And they were skillful to destroy. Even though they're brutish on the one hand, they had a high skill in the ability to be able to destroy and to carry out the work of an army on the other hand. So it says in verse 32, thou shalt be fuel to the fire. Now this fire that God is going to have here is going to be a destructive fire. It's going to be one that he's blowing upon to make it burn more rapidly. But the fire has to have fuel, and the fuel is going to be the Ammonites. Thou shalt be fuel to the fire. Thy blood shall be in the midst of the land. Now, you're going to have bloodshed. You're going to undergo physical experience of this terror of the Babylonian army. Your blood's going to be shed in the midst of the land. Thou shalt be no more remembered. Now, there was coming a time in which the Ammonites were going to be completely wiped out. God had two primary things that he held against these Ammonites. In Deuteronomy, the 23rd chapter, beginning with the 3rd verse, "An Ammonite or Moabite shall not enter into the congregation of the Lord, even to their 10th generation shall they not enter into the congregation of the Lord forever, because they met you not with bread and water in the way when you came forth out of Egypt, and because they hired against thee Balaam the son of Beor of Bethor of Mesopotamia to curse thee. Nevertheless, the Lord thy God would not hearken unto Balaam, but the Lord thy God turned the curse into a blessing unto thee, because the Lord thy God loved thee. Thou shalt not seek their peace nor their prosperity all thy days forever." So they had this curse placed upon them because they sought to have Balaam to curse God's people, and because they wouldn't give them passage through their land or any assistance when they came out of the land of Egypt. And so here he says, as a result of that, they're going to be fuel for the fire. Thy blood shall be in the midst of the land. Thou shalt be no more remembered. There was going to come a time when these Ammonites would be wiped off from the face of the earth. They would no longer exist. And so while Israel, the nation that they so greatly disdained, the nation that they so gladly held themselves up as being superior to, Israel would still exist forever. Israel still would be known and recognized by the world. This nation of Ammon would no longer be in existence. And so he says, "For I, the Lord, have spoken it. It's going to come to pass because I've spoken it. It's my word. It's my promise. It's my prophecy." And we see then how that this great prophecy of God was fulfilled. And so this little passage about Ammon is a lesson in the truthfulness of God's prophecies. We're going to have more about Ammon later in the book of Ezekiel. Well, we're going to close at that point for this time. Till next time, this is NC Crouch saying, goodbye, friend.